Okay, so this is recorded, and since it's for radio, typically I ask authors to state their name for me, but I wonder if maybe you can help me. How do you pronounce the name O-V-E?
Uva, like the middle part of Hoover. If you say Hoover real slow, you'll get it. Uva. Uva.
We say it a lot of different ways over here in the United States, so that helps a lot.
No, I gathered, but it's a really, really common Swedish name for a man of that generation. That's why I chose it, because I thought it was funny that he had this really typical name for that generation. It was like have an American called Stan or Alan or John. But that joke kind of got lost in translation.
I suppose it did.
No one had ever heard the name.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Uwe is the title character of Frederick Bachman's best-selling novel, A Man Called Uwe. Although many Americans, myself included, do not know how to pronounce his name, that didn't stop us from loving the book and reading everything else Bachman has written. His latest release in the United States is a novel titled Anxious People, in which a failed bank robber holds a group of strangers hostage at an apartment open house. We spoke on the day Anxious People made it to number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and we talked about the book, his work in general, and mental health. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. So most people in the United States recognize you from that novel, A Man Called Uwe, and you are a number one New York Times bestselling author, including Anxious People, which was just listed at number one overnight. And so you're the author of, now, if I counted this right, I hope, 7 novels and 2 novellas. Is that accurate?
6 novels, I
six.
Think.
6, okay, all right.
Did I miscount them? I think it's 6 novels and a couple of novellas. I don't know how many, I don't remember how many novellas were published in the U.S., but I think it's 6 novels at least, and then I think 2... Yeah, it's 2 novellas, and then it's 1 work of what you call nonfiction, right?
Oh, okay.
I wrote a book called Things My Son Needs to Know About the World, which my publisher called A Dysfunctional Parent's Guide.
Okay. I think I was including
so
that.
So it's 7 with that, sure.
Yes. So I read somewhere that you think you're a better storyteller than a writer, and that Anxious People is like an amalgamation of 3 ideas that you had in your head: a hostage situation, a locked room mystery, and ordinary people living with ordinary anxiety. So first, to you, what is the difference between storytelling and writing? And second, how were you able to get these 3 ideas to work together?
Well, I think the comparison I often use is to music, that the best musicians, there are exceptional musicians technically that all other musicians look at and say that guitarist is the best guitarist in the world. But that doesn't necessarily transfer to good songwriting. A lot of the most popular, most beloved songs of all time, a 13-year-old can learn the chords of that song because it's usually a really simple song, the ones that we love the most. So songwriting and being the best musician is not necessarily the same thing. And it's the same way for me with writing. I mean, there are writers that I look up to tremendously and who I think are great authors because of the way that they use language, the way that they write. And that's a technical thing. And I'm no way near that. I don't aspire to being a great... I do aspire to it at some point down the line. I hope that, you know, at the end of my career, in 30, 40 years, that I might be able to write in a way that would be great writing. But I'm not close to that yet. But I am, you know, but I think my strength is in the storytelling. I'm better at telling stories. And that's what I focus on. So there is a little bit of a difference. And I'd like to view myself much more as a storyteller than as a writer. On the other question, there were 3 parts of it. I think I described it most clearly as there, it's three parts, Anxious People. It's a comedy about a hostage situation at an open house. It's a relationship drama, because everything I write is relationship drama. So it's a relationship drama about how people are trying to get through the day, holding up marriages and jobs and relationships and being parents and trying to hold it all together, and those everyday anxieties that people struggle with so much, and depressions and what comes with it. And the third part was that I wanted to try and write a very classical locked room mystery. I didn't want it to be a thriller. I didn't want it to be a crime or a murder mystery. I wanted it to be a riddle and a mystery, but in a comedic setting. So that was the three things that I was aiming at when trying to write it.
And I understand that the hostage situation came from an idea you had while searching for an apartment with your wife. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. We were out looking at apartments. This is a couple of years ago. I have 10, 15 ideas for novels in my head at any given time, and they swirl around. And one idea can swirl around for a couple of years before I actually, you know, all of a sudden, like, oh, I know how to do it now. But it was 4 years ago, maybe, I think, we were out looking at apartments, and we went looking at so many apartments, so many. And I, after about three of them, I had already decided that all three of these are fine, honey, and I don't care. I think that if you find an apartment that you like and the kids like, I think I'm going to be fine. I can't see a way of you telling me, like, we love this apartment, and I'm telling you, no, I don't like it. I very early on just understood that I don't really care where we live, apparently. So I started looking at people instead, because that's what I do. That's where I steal everything that I write from. I look at strangers, and especially when strangers are annoyed or when they're fighting and they're arguing, that's, you know, you'll find me eavesdropping. If you're fighting with your partner at the grocery store, you'll find me 2 miles down listening, because that's gold for a writer. And I did that, and I had this idea. I looked at, this is a very common thing. The open house viewing is a very common thing in Sweden. All apartments are, you know, and you have two viewings basically, and then you have to decide. So people are really like stressed and they're annoyed, and everyone view the other people at the viewing as competition. So you're all a little bit of an enemy to each other. And I just found that to be really funny. And I had this thought when I was standing there, like, it would be really funny if all these people were trapped in here together. And from that grew that idea that it would be really funny to have a hostage situation at an open house. And also, I really liked the fact that I could place the entire story within one apartment, because I feel the smaller the world, the more I can dive into the relationships of the characters. And I want as small of a setting as possible.
Now, I read in an interview that you create characters through their relationships with others. So how does that work? How do you create characters that we care about?
The only answer I can give you is that, first of all, I like telling you about the relationships because I like you to understand the character through what relationships that character is having with other people. So I often let you get to know a person by how other people view that person. The other thing is that the only thing I can say about how you make people care about a character is that it can't be a character to me. It has to be a real person to me. I have to keep writing that character and thinking about that character until it's a real person to me, until I feel like I have to defend this person and I have to explain this person to other people. It has to be important to me that you get this person. The best thing I've ever heard someone say about writing, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, the comic book writer Grant Morrison said that if you cry when you read it, it's probably an extension of me crying when I wrote it. And it's the smartest thing I've ever heard about writing. If I don't laugh, you won't laugh. If I don't cry, you won't cry. If I don't feel everything when I write it, you won't feel anything when you read it.
You've addressed suicide in your writing, and you've addressed anxiety and mental health. And in the early pages of Anxious People, you wrote, quote, "Sometimes it hurts, it really hurts, for no other reason than the fact that our skin doesn't feel like it's ours." Although this accurately describes how I've been feeling the last 6+ months, this book isn't really it's not a reaction to COVID, but has the pandemic and 2020 in general brought a focused attention to these issues, do you think?
That's a really hard question to answer. I don't know. It's, this book was published in Sweden a year ago,
right.
So it was long before we knew anything about this. I think, sure, maybe people talk about anxiety a little more now. While I would hope, I think one of the things that I kept coming back to when I was in therapy for a long while, and that of course led up to a lot of the things in the book and a lot of the discussions about anxiety, about depression in the novel, comes from me being in therapy for a long while, and also being a very, very difficult patient, I think, because I asked a lot of questions, and my therapist at the end was like, "Well, Fredrik, you know, you're paying me to ask questions. You're not supposed to be. You need to close your mouth and listen a little bit." We had a discussion, and he said something really clever to me, and he said, it's a problem in our society that if you come to work and you haven't slept and you don't look well and you don't feel well, and someone asks you, you know, what's wrong with you, it's going to be more socially accepted in most workplaces for you to say, oh, I didn't sleep because, I'm hungover because I was out drinking. That's going to be more socially accepted at your workplace than saying, I suffer from depression, so I can't sleep at night. Or I had a panic anxiety attack this morning. That's why I look like this. I have them once in a while. It's okay, and I've learned to live with them. But I've had them since I was a kid, and once in a while I can't breathe, and I think I'm gonna die, and I'm just lying on the floor, gasping, because my anxiety levels are so high. If you say that, people are gonna. They're not going to know how to respond or react or talk to you. But if you just say, oh, I'm hungover, then it's going to be a joke. It's going to be, yeah, I know the feeling, yeah. And, you know, and your workday is just going to go on. So my therapist said he's had a lot of patients which actually can relate to that in a lot of instances it's been easier for them to say they're hungover than to say, well, I suffer from anxiety issues.
I was going to wrap up and ask if you ever found an apartment, but now I feel like I should ask, do you have any advice for anxious people?
Try to seek out help in any way or form that you can. Don't try to soldier through yourself, because it hardly ever works. And there are many different ways of getting help, because some of it can be just talking to people around you and admitting, like, I'm not feeling well. I'm struggling with anxiety. My self-esteem is really low. I'm really scared, or whatever it is that you are going through. And there's a lot of resources online. There's a lot of help to be found. I found on social media, because a lot of people are very open about talking about it on social media. So a lot of help is to be found, because it often helps to talk about it, and often it helps that other people explain to you what it's been like for them. And all of a sudden you gather, that's how I feel. Someone else put it into words for you, and that can help a lot. And then, of course, there's professional help. which I had, but it's often a combination of all those things. And a big part of it is accepting that you're not alone in it. A lot of people suffer from it. And some of it is, for me, I can't speak for everyone else, but for me it was a lot of, and that's a lot what Anxious People is about. I mean, it's a comedy, but when I tackle subjects like anxiety and suicide and depression, I do it in a comedic form because I feel like the reader will trust me then and will know that if I make you laugh, you will trust me that when we go to a dark place, I will bring you back again. I won't leave you down in the darkness. But I think a lot of what I was trying to get through in the emotional parts of the book was that what I learned from therapy was that it might not ever be 100% okay. I might not ever be 100% cured from depression and dark thoughts and feeling anxiety and feeling of being inadequate and small and not living up to everyone's expectations in my mind. But the goal is not for everything to be perfect. The goal is not for me to be happy every second of every minute of every day. That's not the goal. The goal is to be okay. The goal is to just be okay and just having the tools to get through the day and just be okay. That's what I'm shooting for now. And I think for a long time I was shooting for being happy all the time. Like, why am I not happy all the time? And my therapist at one point said to me, well, do you have to be? Is that a reasonable goal in life, to be happy all the time? Wouldn't that be enough? And so I think that was my sentiment at the end, that shoot for okay.
Well, the book is Anxious People. Thank you so much for visiting with me today. It was very powerful and very much appreciated.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Frederick Bachman, author of the book Anxious People, which was published by Atria Books. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this interview, please consider writing a review or giving us a rating. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.